introduce my friend Ewan he goes to the Independent Methodist Church from. It's not the second church, but I was going to. It was going to be Paul Rose, who's the current school chaplain, and just but Paul's away on the conference. He said, "Try you, and he's got a good BBC voice."
I actually thought that was third choice, but so second's better.
Even though it comes from the world, it's a good lad. And he's involved in education. That's all I know. I don't understand what he does.
I'm just my wife, so that's okay. We're going to conduct some interviews now with some wonderful people who have volunteered to share their experiences of tragedies and hurtful experiences. So that's great. So please, obviously, give them your full support. We're all going to be sat up here in due course. So yes, so get in the way. So Anne, if I could welcome you up first of all. Our first esteemed guest. Nice to take a seat just there. can I just check? We've got flowers on the table. Can you all see that? Yeah, fine, okay. So how we're going to play this is that I interview each of my guests in turn, and then when they've had their say and had their turn, they're going to move around and sit next to me here. So the hot seat, that is the hot seat next to Chris. Okay, Anne, are you okay?
Yes.
So could you just, first of all, just to get us into this, tell us a bit about yourself.
My name's Anne MacDonald. I worship at Penrith Methodist Church. I've lived in Penrith all my life. I said earlier that I went to this school. That's not strictly true. I went to Tynefield, which in those days was across the road. I've got two children, I should say, young men now, and I've just recently become a gran.
Thank you. Okay, so can you now explain to us or share with us what tragedy has happened to you and when was this?
Doing my best. So when I was 30, I was married, had two children, two boys. One was two, the other was four. And one Sunday morning I said goodbye to my husband and went off to play golf. And I was going to church. And within an hour of his party, he was killed in a road traffic accident. The first I heard about it was when I was actually in church, and my mother and a dear friend came to tell me. As you can imagine, it was awful, really awful, and you kind of, what am I going to do? How am I going to cope? Got these two little children, and how am I going to live? How am I going to live financially? All those thoughts going on in my head at the time.
Okay, thank you. So how would you say the situation affected you in the moment then?
Just complete devastation. I mean, you hardly know whether you legs are going to carry you, or what to say, and everybody's so very kind, and yet that kindness itself is the worst possible thing at the time. So just total confusion and helplessness, really.
Okay, thank you. And how would you say the experience changed you?
Dramatically. I was brought up in Penrith, and at the time that the accident happened, we lived in Carlisle, but I kept going to the Methodist Church whenever I was at my mother's and what have you. But I would say I was going through the motions. I don't think I really had faith as such then. I believed in God, of course, but I didn't have a personal faith. And I was quite, quite dramatic, really. I was sort of, we'd gone home to my mother's and there's, you know, various things under tables and police and all sorts of things going on. And I just remember I withdrew to one of the bedrooms. I needed to be on my own. And a fortnight before that had happened, we'd actually just come back from a holiday. So I was just looking through these lovely photographs of the wonderful time that we'd had on our holiday. And I just suddenly had a very real feeling that somebody was there with me. And the words that came to my mind was, "I will never lose you." And I can say that God has never left me. And I sometimes run away from him, but he's always there whenever I go back. So that's a really dramatic thing. Yeah. And on a sort of faith aside, interestingly, I was quite, people won't believe this, but I was quite a shy person. And my husband was very, very personable, I suppose you would say. And just strangely, I seemed to take on his personality, and it was what was needed. I needed to become something that I hadn't been before. And, you know, I honestly think that the Lord had a part in that as well.
And thank you very much for sharing with us. So, can I invite Jen to the front, please? So, Jennifer, thank you very much for joining us up on stage. Similar questions, really, to put to you as well, about your experiences of where's God going to hurt us. So can you tell us just, first of all, a bit about yourself, please?
Well, I was born in Blackpool and lived in Blackpool until 2004, when we came to live here, or just outside of Penrith. So that's where my background is. I had a sort of very Christian upbringing. I used to go to Sunday school, but I actually came to faith about, I would say, 1998, because things were quite difficult, and I felt there was more to life than I was having. And I actually joined the Salvation Army in Blackpool. And I think that was part of God's plan.
Okay, thank you. What tragedy then would you say happened to you, or did happen to you, and when was this, please?
Well, I had two children. I had a daughter who was born in 1965. And today, my son was born in 1969. So 2002. Knock on the door. Two policemen at the door. My husband had gone out. Actually, gone out to sell the ball right in the streets and back in. And I thought perhaps it had been an accident, but it wasn't that. He came to tell me that my son had died and he'd jumped off the top of a multi-story car.
So it's a tragedy. How did it affect you in the moment?
Well, actually, I would just describe it as the end of the world.
So, were you able to function then? Or?
Well, sort of, in a daze, I would say. When somebody dies, there's a lot of things to do. It's like when he hears things. Organising a funeral, but no, but going to identify the body in the mortuary isn't it easy. But I'll just tell you a little bit about the background, I guess, and everything. He was 33 when he died. He had a lot of difficulties. He was very clever, was top 10% in school. But all efforts and my mom's was to drive his test first time. It was very clever. Photographic memory. But he found it very difficult to get on with people. He really had difficulties in his bullying. And but when he was 16, he was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome. And at that time, it was very rare. In fact, my doctor knew nothing about it, but said there was somebody in the family who could probably diagnose him. So he went to Liverpool and he was diagnosed. And then they said, well, that's the diagnose, but there's no treatment. So he struggled on. And his main difficulties of mood swings and depression were because he couldn't really find any suitable career. Although he did several jobs. And then he moved out. He got his own flat. And he did work at various places. And then he became unemployed again. And then he moved back home. And on the day he died, he decided to go back to his flat. And I heard him go out early, I was standing home, and heard the door go, and I thought he was rushing back to his flat room. And he wasn't.
Thank you for sharing that. It's very, very emotional. But how did that experience change you?
Well, of course, I had got support because I was a good Christian. And I thought it was God's plan. He prepared me to go through it. And I was surrounded by people who would help, but who needed help. The officers from the motorway or the railway. And I rang a friend who was a retired officer. In fact, the police rang her because I was on my own while they went to get my husband from town. And she wasn't in, and they left a message. But she came around within a couple of hours. She got home, got the message. To where we heard, just about 5 or 6 minutes. And comforted me and prayed with me, which was really good. And just by pure coincidence, about 3 days ago, she phoned me. She said, I still think about you. You're still special. And she has dementia. She can't remember everything, but she can remember it.
That's wonderful. And finally, in what way would you say your relationship with God has changed as a result of all of this?
Well, it's changed a lot. I mean, in the UK, we lived here 2 years after we came here. And to get away from some memories. But we're now part of the Methodist Church, and I have a lot more confidence in all sorts of ways. And I'm very happy to witness that God's helped me through all these things. And to talk to people and say, oh, he's helped God. And I actually got something I just wanted to read to you, because there are one or two songs that helped me, and this one in particular, you may not know it. So I'm very grateful to you, because sometimes just a piece of music can be wonderful. These are the words. Do you sometimes feel that no one truly knows you? And that no one understands or really cares? Through these people, God himself is close beside you. And through them, he plans to answer all your prayers. Ours is not a distant God, remote and feeling, who is careless of our loneliness and pain. Through the ministry of men, he gives his healing in their dedicated hands, brings hope again. Someone cares. Someone cares. Someone knows your deepest need, your burden shares. Someone cares. Someone cares. God himself will hear the whisper of your prayers.
Thank you. That's it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Jane. I met Jen and Norrie's daughter tonight, Sandra, in the front row, and she said, she just pointed out that it's Jane's wedding anniversary tonight, so I'm sure Norrie can.
Okay, so for our final guest tonight, if I can invite Eva to the stage. Let's take a hot seat. Thank you for joining us.
Hello.
So, Eva, first of all, same questions for the others. Could you just tell us a bit about yourself, please?
I'm Eva. I was brought up in Penrith. I've got a husband and two little boys. I was brought up as a Christian. But I am one.
Okay, thank you. So what was the tragedy that affected you?
Well, a couple of years ago when I was pregnant with my first little boy, Benjamin, we found out that he had a fatal diagnosis and that doctors didn't expect him to live outside the womb when he was born. And we were encouraged and told that the ordinary thing to do in that situation would be to end the pregnancy, but we decided to let him live out his life. And he was born early and lived for 12 days and died with us in hospital.
Thank you for sharing that. How did this situation affect you in the moment and at that time?
I think with this kind of grief, it's less of one moment and more a series of moments, because you begin grieving when you find out that you're not going to live out your whole child's life, and once you've accepted that, there's the rest of the grief to deal with as well. So your child is born and then you grieve for the newborn experience that you would have had, and then your child dies and you're grieving for the child that they shouldn't be. But because it's not an ordinary grief, because I guess you get so much time, and a pregnancy is always a joy, and having a baby is always a joy. So there's so much joy mixed in with the grief. And I don't know if that makes it easier or harder, but you get a lot of time to enjoy your child's life before they're born as well. So it's very different.
No, I understand that. Thank you. So how would you say this experience has changed you?
Well, as a person, I'd say having a child at all obviously affects your ability to love, but when you've packed so much love into such a small space of time, it completely changes the way that you see love and the way that you see people. And it definitely allows you to treat people with more love and see people with more love, because you see the worth, the inherent worth in people. Rather than just for what they can do for you. And although losing a baby is never an easy thing to go through, I've certainly found that I find it easier to be positive about other situations with that grief in your heart, because you always see a potential to remember your baby and to change the way you see things because of them.
Thank you. And then finally, I think you alluded to this already, but in what way has your relationship with God changed as a result of this?
Well, I didn't have a relationship with God. I'd never explored one, I'd never wanted one. But when Benji died, I had so many questions about what happened, and I had so much gracefulness in my heart over it. I felt like I'd been given grace, and although I'd lost Benjamin, he'd still changed my life in a way that I couldn't have imagined. And I thought, how could this have happened to me? How could I have been given this gift? And why has it changed me in this way? You know, I would have expected to just be sad and just be lonely, but what had actually happened was, along with that sadness and that grief, I'd been given a new way of looking at life. And I just said to myself, this isn't of this earth, this isn't something that I've done to myself. It's my answer was God, and it didn't come all at once, but eventually I came to God, and I'm very glad I did, and I feel like that was part of his plan as well to bring us together. And now I've got another wonderful son, and he's an answered prayer. So.
Which is wonderful. Thank you for sharing that with us, and for all three of you sharing with us. Just very finally, I suppose, is there anything you'd like us to share which you perhaps wanted to in the moment and think about it?
I think when you've been through something really difficult, it makes it easier for you to go and speak to other people who are struggling. Because before that, I would find it really hard to speak to somebody and talk about their loss, because I wouldn't know what to say. And when you've been through something yourself, you're able to go alongside someone.
I'd just like to say that one tragedy isn't the end, because you carry on living and other things happen to you. And in my own case, I remarried almost 10 years ago, and sadly my husband died last year. So, you know, one tragedy is awful, but it does keep happening, but you can live through it. I hope that I'm testimony to
that.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for being so brave, you three girls. Well done. Thank you. Now, it's my great pleasure to introduce Tim. I don't think we've got any of our other Methodist ministers here. So, Tim, I've been in the PNC for the youngs since 1982 when I started working with him. And Tim's the best minister we've ever had. that's what you told me to say, Tim. No, he's the only minister who's told me off. Do you remember that? He took me into his office. He had to tell me off. He's forgotten to tell me. We've got quite a lot in common, really. We might have some pictures if it all works. I put on Facebook that last night we had a trip to Deepdale. Who knows where Deepdale is? Or what Deepdale is? Can we kill that light light or not? There's a big match, Preston versus Derby. I didn't realise that I'm just Tim's doing that, praying for a draw. It was a draw. Here's the great man. There's Tom Finney in the background. There's a famous Tom Finney statue there. There's Tim in front. He's twice the man he used to be here. He has a lot of layers on. Next slide. There's two or three slides. For man. And that's Tim, who's a senior citizen. I'm not sure whether it's a senior citizen or not, but I got an achievement ticket. Senior citizen on one side, and Tim fell in love with Danny Hamilton's wife, Miriam. She's a Derby supporter. So she had a young adult ticket and senior citizen. Anyway, moving on, just to prove that Danny was there as well. It was a football match. Next slide, please. There you go. And we've also got a love of the mountains. And next slide, please. This brings me to why I invited Tim to come tonight. This is Sky. Next slide is Sky as well. And back in 1997, Tim organised a trip onto Sky and onto the Coolin Ridge. In the next picture, you may recognise. You may or may not recognise him. We planned to take a bit of an ambitious attempt to traverse the Coolin Ridge. We weren't particularly well prepared. And memories of the weather wasn't great. I remember we vivid on the first summit, Garthven, the North Sky. And all I remember is I fell asleep at last. And the next thing I remember is Tim going, "Jack, come on, get up, lads. We've got a long way to go. Come on." So about a minute's sleep before Tim walked us over. Another slide. Going somewhere in the background. This is Glenn Bridle. And anyway, we were in the pub. We came to town off later, we were in the pub, and Tim had a message, an urgent message to ring home. And the message was that Sam, his son, had died, suddenly died, and we all raced back. And we put the tanks down, and came back for overnight. And it was Tim that was comforting us, saying, "Are you all right?" And we were tired and all very distressed, and it was Tim who was ministering to us even then. And the next picture, Sam, Jim and me and Rex used to run a youth group called YPA. And Sam's the one on your left at the front there. And Jessica and me. Tim and Kay's other, Tim and Kay's daughters on the far right. And after Sam's death, it didn't have to shake up the youth group and everybody else. And the only song, we used to sing quite a lot. And the only song we could sing was actually the song we just sung now, was called Faithful Rock. You're My Rock. So thanks for singing it. So without further ado, Tim, if you'd like to come onto the stage. Now I'll take a seat in the audience. He's taking his pink top off, that's weird.
There are so many people that have been a blessing to Kay and I here at Penrith. And you can't believe it's 14 years since we left Penrith. Although we never did leave Penrith in a way. He's a great guy, isn't he, Chris, because, no matter what you think about this tonight, you know, whether you're a Christian or not, or not sure, Chris does this for one reason, it's because he loves people. You know, that's why he does it. But it's really weird. It's really weird, Chris, because he's a vet, you know that, don't you? And vets are, he's raking it in as a vet, you know. But have you seen the state of his daughter's jeans, you know? We're walking back to the car, and there's a Sainsbury's. And I thought that's really weird because in the grounds of this Sainsbury's at Preston, there's a full size plastic cat. And I said to him, "Look at that, Chris." I said, "This work then, if you do an inspection." Before I finished the sentence, he whipped out his pocket a full length plastic work. Let me say to you very quickly, I'm not talking to you tonight as a minister, I'm talking to you as a dad, okay? And I've got no clever answers. I'm not here to have a theological debate with anybody. All I can tell you is my story and throw a few insights in. I don't ask you to believe it or not, I'm just telling you what I believe happened to me, okay? I remember coming down the mountain from the Coolings, and we got this message, and I remember collapsing, somebody chopped my legs off and I was on the floor. You know, where's God in all this? Because Sam had never had a day of school in his life. You know, he was fit as a fiddle, and I couldn't believe it. And I remember in those split seconds thinking, how am I going to get through this? What am I going to do? I'll never be a minister again. What's going to happen? And then God turns up. And the real frightening thing about it is he looked like Chris Swift. Because Chris came and prayed for him. And the truth is, I wanted to hit him. That's the truth. I wanted to hit him. Because I was angry. And I was hurting. And I sat down on a rock. Where's God when it hurts? And I sat watching these guys, a mixture, I think there were two or three people from the church, and the rest, I didn't really know the rest of them, really. And I'm sitting on this rock, trying to get my legs working. And I looked up, and every single guy, packing away, was crying. Every single guy. And I heard this voice. I'm not the sort of person who, you know, God said to me, I've got one of those telephones, and some Christians are. You know, where God said to me, but I heard a voice. And it just said, look, these people are hurting as well. But I'm not a hero. I'm not a person who, oh, I'm here to be a hero. And it was so real, this voice. I looked around, and there was nothing behind me except the cubans. These people are hurting as well. So I remember standing up and moving around and helping people to fold the tent, put my arm around and said, come on, we're going to be okay. And, you know, I'm crying, we're going to be okay. And I can't remember the ministry to ever on the bus coming back. It was the longest night journey in my life. You know, where's God when it hurts? And then my daughter was on a small trip in France. And so we had to arrange for her to come to Manchester Airport. Kay and I, my wife there, God bless you, we drove down to Manchester Airport. And Christians sometimes use this word hell. Let me tell you what hell is. Hell is going to Manchester Airport to pick your daughter up, to tell her that her brother's died. And everybody at Manchester Airport is either going on holiday or coming back from Spain. Everyone's having a drink, and they've all got these big hats on and false moustaches and, you know, stuffed donkeys, and you're sitting there trying to hold them together. You know, where's God when it hurts? It's a funny thing, grief, isn't it? You know, I've been deeply touched by the stories, some that I knew, some that I didn't. And it's a very personal thing. Everybody in this room knows what grief is. You know, you can grieve over a broken relationship, the death of a loved one, losing your job, losing your health. And it's different for different people. And I loved it when Anne said about, you know, life can go on. You know, God, you know, why have you got this so wrong? Why have you got it so screwed up? You know, why do good people die young? I actually think God's got it right, you know, because a lady at Penrith Church, who was coming up to be 70, said to me, I wish I'd died rather than Sam's. I've had 70 years. And what I did say to her was, yeah, I wish you'd died instead. Because that's true, that's honest. But actually, I thought, God's got it absolutely right. You know, the great thing about life is it's so uncertain. It's so uncertain. Wouldn't it be awful if we all knew the time and the moment? Oh, look, you know, Ruth 27, you're the next one, Ruth. You're right, Ruth, you're not, okay. What if grief is a gift, a challenge, an opportunity? What if every single one of us in this room made a decision tonight to live life, to make the most? Don't put off telling somebody you love them till tomorrow. Tell them tonight. You know, make the most of opportunities. What if we're called to live a life that's so rich, so full, so vibrant, that we live every day as if it's our last day, not in a desperation sense, but because life is so much worth living. And that's what I've tried to do. I don't always succeed. That's what I've tried to do. I was in a chip shop once, and I was getting the chips, fish and chips. I thought I might push the boat down, I might even have a bush of peas, I don't know yet. And there's a guy next to me, and we're like leaning on the wall waiting. He was in Fife, I can see it now. And we chatted, and I said to him, "Oh, what do you do for a living?" He said, "I'm in insurance." I said, "That's great." He said, "What do you do?" And I'm not very quick normally. I said, "I'm in assurance." "I'm in assurance." And he sort of looked at me and scratched his head. And before we could go much further, "Order's ready." Assurance. You know, the Bible's really honest. Because it tells us, right from page one, right the way through, that life isn't forever here. You look at the book of Psalms, or Psalms. Should we say Psalms, shouldn't we? That's how it's spelled, Psalms. And it's full of stories about people losing, going through a difficult time. And then you've got that bloke called Job. Although posh people say Job. You know, it's a wretched time. The amazing thing about Jesus is, he never ever says, "Follow me and everything will be okay." I mean, why would you want to follow somebody like that? "As long as you follow me, nothing bad will happen to you." What he says is, "I will be with you always." I have to say that when Sam died, part of me died as well. Part of me died that day. But the important thing was, I knew that Jesus was with me. I just knew. And it's times like that, you know, it's times like that, us people who say, "I've got faith, blah, 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 you know, Jesus is great." And it's times like that when the proverbial is the fact. I don't know what the proverbial is, but something is the fact. When you find out what you really believe, is it just words? What's real about it? And I have to say, I just knew that Jesus was with me. I just knew. You know, Chris Smith's a really weird guy because he likes climbing mountains. Well, so do I. And let me tell you, part of the reason that is because I like climbing mountains because I might just fall off. By that, what I mean is that, you know, I don't want to live a life where I'm wrapped in cotton wool. I don't want to live a life where everything's okay. Because I like to think I love my wife and a daughter and a husband, and by the way, the clock turned, it took about 15 years, but now I've got two fantastic grandchildren, boys. But I know it's not forever. And actually, if it was forever and bad things didn't happen, and, you know, what sort of life would that be? I think it's because it's that possibility of losing that I love more than I thought I ever would do. belonging, of caring. And it's weird, because one of the great claims of the Christian faith is that love is eternal. And one of the great claims of the Christian faith is that love, it is stronger than death. And I get that. Because I love Sam as much now as I've ever loved him. And I've not seen him for 20 odd years. And I'm also aware that he loves me as much as he's ever known. I don't mean it in a weird, spooky sense, because if that was the truth, I'd never switch the bedroom light off when I went to bed, would I? You know, ooh! I'm just aware that love is so strong, and so unshakable, and so unbreakable. And the other great thing that the Christian faith says, and no other faith says, is that actually we shall be reunited. But it's a weird thing here, because Jesus said, I'll be with you always. And the other thing he said was, I've come to heal the brokenhearted. Well, thanks very much. But I don't want my broken heart mending. Yet. Yet. And what sort of God would he be if he actually said, oh, you know, you've lost your wonderful husband, or you've lost your son. There you go. It's better. It's okay. I know some people in Penrith thought that, you know, oh, Tim's done really well with this, and Kay's done really well with this. Well, I like to do a crying in private, thanks very much. It's a private thing. And 20 years later, I can be driving the car down the road, and a record will come on. I have to pull the car over. Couldn't just pull it. And grief is a very strange thing. Because, in a way, grief is quite a selfish thing. Because actually, what you're really reflecting on what I've lost. And the other thing about grief, I think, did I tell you I failed me 11 plus? It gets better, though. Did I tell you in the end, I also failed me 13 plus? So I'm not that bright, really. But one of the things that I've learned about grief is that it's a thief. Grief is a thief. Because what it does, it makes you focus on all that you've lost. And makes you almost forget all that you've had. You know, I love Anne McDonald, and before that, I loved Dan Mason, which is a great girl, I tell you. but she's a great person, which is more important. And I just loved it when she could talk about Gary tonight, and that was hard, Anne. How exuberant he was, absolutely exuberant. You see, Anne has learned a trick. She's never forgotten all that she's had. All that she's had. And I had 13 absolutely fantastic years with a boy called Sam. And I enjoyed every day having a wonderful daughter and grandchildren. Because I treasure what I've got. I treasure what I've had. Because God never said everything's going to be alright, everything's forever. He said, I'll be with you. Always. And so what I think about that is that no matter how much hits the fan, no matter how bad it gets, no matter how difficult it gets, all I need is to know he's with me. He's with me. You know, where's God when it hurts? Well, he's actually in Moreland Parish Church. That's you. Sam died in the June. And it'll be about September, Moreland School having an harvest festival in the church. And they said, oh, Tim, can you come and give the address? I thought, I'll be all right. And I sort of get there, and I sort of sit in the congregation waiting to be called up. And I thought it was all right. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, a great honour, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. He sang this song behind a painted smile. And it was the Iron Rules, actually, let's get it right. And I'm sort of sitting there like this. And a little boy who I'd never seen before, never met him before, he about four, he sort of looks round and he brings his big truck and he comes up and he climbs on my knee with his big truck. And all the alarm bells start going up. Safeguarding. Don't sit on my knee. And his mum looks round and she looks at this strange guy with this plastic collar on, and she went. So I'm playing with this kid and he's showing me this truck and it's all going off the front. And then it came to my turn, so I took him back to his mum. And I stood and looked at this sea of children. And inside it was like a deck of cards all collapsing. You know, where's God when it hurts? But a bit like a man feeling there, really. And the next thing you know, this little boy comes out to the front, and it's like a long walk, it's like the walk of shame, you know. He comes down, and he just, I'm standing there like this, and he just grabs my hand. Alright? Where's God when it hurts? He's in the child holding the hand. He's in the child holding the hand. And it was alright. And then what happens is that I become a chaplain for the school here. It was great because it meant I could play with the staff fireside football team. And it was great. And so here I am in this school, coming in, and it was such a joy to me. Such a joy. But over the next 2 or 3 years, we lost 2 relatively young teachers with cancer. We lost 6 or 7 children. Can you believe that? 6 or 7 children. And what happens is, whenever something happens, they ring for the minister of death. Me. And I always want them to ring somebody else. Always. Yeah, where's God when it hurts? I'm coming to school and I think I'll take the long way around. it might be closer than Gap. But I only live a mile away, so whichever way I come, it's about 3 minutes. And I'm coming, and on the way, I'm thinking, Lord, why am I going here? What am I going to say? What am I going to do? I just don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to say. And you walk in, and it's like a tidal wave. At school, and kids are walking around crying, teachers just... You go in the staff room, and everyone's broken. What are we going to do? And you walk in, and the teacher comes up to you and says, we're all right now, Thorpe. You're here. But the important thing is, Jesus is there. One of the great... Do you remember John Wayne? I love John Wayne films. You know, they're rubbish, aren't they, but I just love them. You know? And the thing about John Wayne is he always solves a problem with John, Big John. You know, get off your book now, my brother. One of the great roles that John Wayne plays, he like leads the wagon train. He leads them through, gets them there. And one of the great descriptions of Jesus is the pioneer. The one who goes before us. And I just became aware that I haven't got to try too hard. Because Jesus has always gone before me. Always. And sometimes it's just putting your arm around somebody. Sometimes it's just having the word. Sometimes it's actually saying, what are we going to do, with this child's death? We're not going to let it rob us of our hope in life. We're not going to let their life be painted in a colour that says all it added up to was a death. Because it wasn't that. And so what I try to do with the permission of the parents is say, what we need to do is celebrate this life. Celebrate this life. And that's what we did. We tried to come to services and actually say, it's all right to grieve if you laugh. It's all right to grieve if you smile about somebody. And just winding the clock back a little bit, I might. I've got 11 minutes because you said 9 o'clock. Okay. I've got to drive back to Glasgow, you know that, don't you? And it might be snowing on people. So, I remember, learning about Sam's death, and on the Monday, one of the teachers had contacted me, and in absolute tears, he came to see me. He threw his arms around each other, and they would cry together. He says, can you come and tell his friends at school? I thought, this is a great gig, isn't it? This is great. And I thought, that's what Sam would want me to do. So I went into this classroom and sort of dead cool, I tried to be dead cool, and I sort of sat on the corner of the guest lights, No collar, I thought, I'm cool. I just shared that Sam had died. And I said, how are you going to remember him? So I'll tell you how you're going to remember him. You're going to get met the most of every opportunity you give him. Every opportunity you give him. Go for that extra run. put that extra tackle in. Strive for things you don't think are possible. And that would be the greatest tribute you can make to him. You know, where's God when it hurts? Well, the Jesus I understand from scriptures, and I read it now and again, is that he's the God who weeps with us. He's the God who feels our pain. I love that image of Jesus when he goes to see his mate Lazarus, who's not very well really. And he goes, and when he gets there, Lazarus has died. And he weeps. He weeps over the loss of a friend. Yeah, if I'm going to blame God for Sam's death, and I don't, that's the problem. What we do is with God, we say, let's blame God for everything that goes wrong. Is it God's fault that somebody drove a car too fast? Is it God's fault that a guy in London stabbed a 15-year-old boy? Is it God's fault that tonight a guy's going to beat his wife up? I knew a nurse once when I worked at Nottingham. And she came to me and she had a bit of a rough time. And you know, one or two things have gone a bit pear-shaped. And I said to her, what I want you to do then, I said, I've got some stickers. One was yellow and one was red. And I said, here's the red stickers. Every time something goes wrong tomorrow, put a sticker on the fridge. And I mean everything. You burn the toast, sticker. You know, if you put your foot in something you shouldn't, sticker. If you have a row with the boss, sticker. But if something goes right or brings joy, like the sunshine when you get out of bed, yellow sticker. And I'll see you next week. I thought that was a really good pastoral response, you know. 2 days later, she came back to me and she said, I've got a problem. I said, you got some more stickers? She said, yeah. She said, I've used 7 red stickers and 150 yellow stickers. And we have this saying, don't we, in the church? And if you're not in the church, don't worry, because you soon will be, you understand. count your blessings. So if I'm going to blame God for this and that, the only moral place I've got to go then is to actually thank him for this, and this. Yeah? The lady who spoke so wonderfully well has gone. And I wanted to thank her because she just, well, you've all been great, but she said something that really struck me. Can you put your hands up if you've heard this phrase? You'll be alright if you've got enough faith. Have you heard that phrase? What a load of rubbish. What a load of garbage. If you've got enough faith. So does that mean because you know, my heart's still broken, it's because I've not got enough faith? Well, give me some more then. Got nothing to do with faith. The young woman who spoke this evening said, God gave me grace. God gave me grace. And if you don't know what that means, by the way, grace is God's shorthand for undeserved love. You know, I'm standing before God when it hurts and saying, I can't do this anymore. I've got nothing left. Pouring grace in. grace. And one of the things we believe is that you can't earn grace, all you can do is accept it. This grace. Where's God when it hurts? I'm with you always. In the everyday. In the nuts and bolts of life. And one of the problems we have is we think that actually I'm not going to trust God in the everyday things. And then suddenly when, you know, this disaster comes, this tragedy, it's too big a leap. It's too big. So what if we started to trust God in the little things? Help me today at work. Help me to be a bit more patient with the dog in the morning. Yeah, that means a bell, doesn't it? Help me to be a bit more patient with the kids. And as we see God answering those prayers here and there, we can begin to trust Him for a bit more. You know, I don't think I'm anything special. I don't think I've got this amazing faith or belief. All I know is that God is with me. He's with me. He's never let me down. So what I'm going to do is, and what I've decided to do, is that I'm going to live. I'm going to try and encourage, I'm going to try and love, I'm going to try and be a blessing. And my wife will tell you I fail every day at that, but I keep trying. I keep trying. Because I've been overwhelmed by love. And there might be some people here today and thinking, well, I'm not good enough to be a Christian. Join the book. It's all about Him. It's all about Him. I'm going to tell you, I knocked a cocker out of a football match when I was 17. That's got nothing to do with it, but I'm here. Mind you, we did beat Leicester 1-0 that day. So, what I'm saying to you is, why don't you try and trust me? And by the way, if you decide to go through your life without Him, these bad things will still happen. And I'd rather go through it with Him who's with me always than do it on my own. And all I can tell you is, He's never let me down. And I'm saying to anybody here tonight who wouldn't say they're a Christian, you might say it's a load of rubbish. And that's a valid point. It's a valid point if you've looked at the evidence. Chris will be talking to you in a few minutes about that often. Why don't you just find out? Because if it's not true, well, make the most of it because this is all there is. But if it is true, wow. Wow. Last thought. The Bible says we are surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses. Now, what are these people? Well, it's people who simply believed. Just believe. And God said, we will meet again. We will meet again. And I'm absolutely convinced with every ounce of my being, if I wasn't, I would have stopped being a minister on that day, that we will meet again. And all is well. And I don't share this story with you easily. I didn't know what I was going to say when I walked here. You probably, you noticed. But all I know is what Jesus has done for me. And it's all about Him. It's all about Him. And I wonder if anybody here can give me one reason tonight why Jesus doesn't love them. He can't. John, there's nothing you've done in your life to cause Jesus not to love you. And we sing this song, Jesus, take me as I am. And I'm as rough as a proverbial badger's kneecap. Yeah? But Jesus takes me as I am. And that's all right. You will have hurt. You will have pain. But those very things might be the things that actually make life worth living. That make life richer and deeper and more precious. Because of the very fragile nature of life. Father, just rejoice that there is one called Jesus who is stronger than all of the world can grasp. Last story. Okay. Honestly. Muhammad Ali was fighting Joe Frazier a long time ago, before some of you were born. And Joe Frazier was an animal. And he was battering Muhammad Ali. And what people didn't realise, Muhammad Ali was like this. And Frazier was absolutely giving him some. And what Muhammad Ali was doing was, is that all you've got? Is that really all you've got? And it drove him to distraction. And he punched himself out. And in the end, Muhammad Ali went, the great thing about Jesus is he says to us about death and sorrow and sadness, is that all you've got? Is that all you've got? Because I am the resurrection and the life. And I am with you and you and you and you always. Sounds like a good deal to me. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus, for holding me and others in the storms of life. May you know him holding you too, now and always. I'm not going to say amen, because that's what vicars and ministers say, so cheers.